Are we close enough that I could give you just one note on your kids, Scott?
Okay.
No, it's. I'm sorry, I'm opening some wine here. Yeah. I like to do that when I'm giving people notes on their kids. You know, it's just been my observation, and this is just purely because you have two children, and I as far as I know, I have one.
Sure.
They often move at the same time.
Mm.
Now, I don't know how you manage this.
What do you mean? Do you mean like...
Well, okay, last time I saw your children, if I could just speak personally for a moment, because we have met, they both jumped out of an automobile and started running alongside a very busy street at exactly the same time, I think screaming and at one point running in opposite directions.
That sounds like them, yeah.
Yeah, that was them. There was a small one and then a smaller one. And I don't know, I'm just curious. I've seen people where when you fly, you got to sit in different rows. How do you handle... having two of them move at once.
Can you like pause one while the other one is misbehaving? And
oh, you're thinking it's like having dual, like a TiVo with the dual.
That's what I mean.
Or a dual LNB, right? You get it on the. You can have record two shows at once, and you want to be able to say, "I want to be able to like, you know, I want to be able to pause Porky's 2 while I enjoy Masterpiece Theater."
Which one is Porky's 2? That's the girl, right?
The boy.
They're both Porky's. They're both Porky's. There's a Porky's and a Porky's 2.
I think they are both Porky's, and one is just like 10 minutes ahead of the other. the challenge is that, a couple challenges, and it's a great metaphor because if one would just shut the fuck up, I'd be able to watch the other movie and enjoy it. But instead, it's like... You know, it's one movie playing on top of the other, and so it's just this constant cacophony of noise. Are you suggesting maybe, is there some sort of soul-sharing arrangement that could happen here where they each share like one closes their eyes and the other opens? Or have you heard of that before?
I'm no shaman, but I...
We need more shaman stuff. No, I love my kids.
Yeah, I've always admired the economy of what used to be called Siamese twins. I think they have a different name for that now. They call them attached. It's like attached Asians. But I've always admired that economy because it seemed to me that with a little bit of needle and thread and some patience, there's a lot of things you could share. Yeah. And it strikes me that you don't benefit from that economy of scale when you have two children.
No, you don't. You don't. I wonder if you must get some benefit when you have twins. Were you guys ever? Well, first of all, creepy, right?
I mean, totally. Well, the identicals. I had some really good friends that were fraternal twins, and I gotta be honest with you, Scott. I was fine with that. They're different, and I accepted that. But
well, the fraternal twins grow up sort of resenting each other in a healthy way.
Yeah, you gotta admire that.
But they're. I mean, but fraternal twins are twins in the way that you know, Japanese are
heavy on the Asian stuff already. Is that where we're going?
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe. Today's a no Asian. It's Cinco de Mayo.
Well, you got to be honest. My last couple of Mexican jokes seemed to fall kind of flat with you guys, and that made me a little sad.
Well, yeah. We're going to go anti-Asian for Cinco de Mayo.
We should try some Pacific Rim stuff, so maybe some fusion.
A Pacific Rim job.
You look nice today. A Journal of Emotional Hygiene.
I love your children, Scott. I love all children. But, you know, it does seem challenging. It seems like there should be some way. Again, in business, they call it economies of scale, right? You put all your offices in one place, and you only have to pay one electric bill. And it just seems to me you have two very energetic children. And is it fair? Can I say, Scott, the older one seems like he's kind of the leader. Does he egg it on?
Yeah, he's definitely the egger, yeah.
Okay, he's the one you got to take down first.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I see that.
Well, no, I mean, not in a necessarily in a permanent way, but I mean, yeah, well, what do you do? I've been on a plane. I think you guys have met my daughter. I think she is empirically the calmest child ever, and she still drives me crazy on a plane. How are you ever on a plane?
You know, it's funny you said some things that put an idea in my head. I'm surprised that you can get if you're flying with your dog, it's pretty easy to get like doggy Valium, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how much does a dog weigh? A dog weighs like 10 pounds. Maybe 15 pounds, you know, like a smallish dog.
It's like euthanasia. It's very inexpensive and largely by weight.
So why can't I get some sort of calming drug for my child? That seems only fair.
So you're maybe you're talking about pre-flight because I'm thinking maybe you're on Virgin, you hit the red, and you call it up and you say, could I get an eye pillow and maybe some kind of water and maybe a set of those pilot wings and just some special apple juice?
Yeah. I think maybe pre-flight, maybe during the flight, and maybe post-flight. You can just sort of layer it in.
Scott Simpson, this was much, much more acceptable when I was a kid. Do you remember this, Adam? It was much more acceptable to sedate your children, and now today there's a real stigma about whether it's alcohol or drugs or even something as simple as something as harmless as an antihistamine. And I think that's just sad.
It's funny because remember in the days, Merlin, you'll remember this, Adam, this might be where our ages kind of reflect the gap, but do you remember when an arcade, before the days of Pac-Man and Galaga, an arcade meant it was basically a very small opium den?
It was. I mean, the game. I think for legal reasons and a lot of the kind of flyover states, I think it was a legal thing, so that it wasn't officially gambling.
And then Nintendo came around, and you had to do opium in your living room.
Adam, who made the Nintendo? What country?
Oh, you're right. Oh, okay. My bad.
All right. Now, I mean, the thing is that that's a thread that runs through all of this, you know, really. And it's, you know, a lot of, it's a very surprising people.
I want to look on Amazon, but I don't want to know the answer to this question. If there was ever a, you know, in the height of the anti-Japanese business reaction, if there was ever a book called Rim Job. Hmm. That was, you know, sort of a takedown of Japanese
sort of like
domination.
1940s Glenn Beck kind of thing.
Yeah, I guess that word didn't mean what it means now.
No, it's sailors used to use that to mean urethral insertion. And it was something that was very hard to explain to a lot of people because they hadn't had a lot of anatomy lessons at that time. And so they would also call it brisking the spinnaker was another name for it. But, you know, I think anybody who's been overseas knows that the food is different, the culture is different, and, you know, the comfort level around giving your child an opiate, that varies. You know, you're not going to see that in Missouri anymore, and that's a shame.
No, it's too bad.
I'm dead serious, though. Our kid gets sick. So here's the thing. Our kid gets sick. And, you know, let me take you back even further. Now, this is probably going to precede you guys. Do you remember a product called Paragoric?
No.
Okay, I don't even know how to spell this, but this was the most special thing in our house. You know, this was the most fetishistic totem in our house. It was a bottle. It was like a little tiny jokey size, like you get for like a child's doll-sized bottle that had probably like an eighth of an ounce of amber liquid in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what you'd give somebody when they had a tummy ache.
Was it written on in ballpoint pen, like on a white label?
Paragoric.
Spelled differently on every bottle.
Well, it's pretty much what you can guess. It was, you know, it's opium, and you know, I think you know, probably cut with something, but it had that really terrible bitter taste. But man, you took that stuff and you didn't have a tummy ache anymore, and you weren't complaining to mom about it, if I could say.
I guess it probably stops you up too. So it's probably like. It's sort of a miracle cure.
No, it's like cheese. It's eating cheese on a long car ride with a cute girl. It's like you're not gonna bring it up. You know? But you know, my kid gets sick, and you know, here's the problem, Scott. You understand this, and Adam, you understand this. You have a dog. There's times where the importance of the health of the family is riding on getting a good night's sleep. You lose one night's sleep, and you're sad.
Yeah.
You get a quarter of a night's sleep 11 times. There's gonna be problems. So I think it's the health of the family. Now in my day, you throw a Benadryl. Is your kid's gonna go on a plane? You give him a Benadryl. Now all of a sudden I'm Heinrich Himmler because I want to give my kid a Benadryl. My wife says this is, you know, we're gonna, I don't know. Maybe she's gonna grow a tail or something. I think that's a shame. Were you ever sedated, Adam?
Not that I know of. I honestly don't recall ever being sedated. I think I was a pretty sedate child anyway. So
when you weren't dancing or wearing a vest,
right. There was no need to drug me or any of that stuff.
Are you, Adam, are you interested at some point in,
nope.
in having... Okay.
Did you have a question for the sandwich?
In having kids, is that what you're going to ask?
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask.
Yeah.
Okay, now I changed my mind. Yes. Yes, I am.
Yeah.
I have to confess that I do feel a little bit of a condescension or a sort of a superiority to people who don't have children, and I should preface this by saying that I really respect so many reasons why you wouldn't have kids, and of course there are a lot of really moral and just reasons why you may not want to have children, and I get that, and that makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. But then I see people who don't have children. And, you know, when you're 20, 30, 35, it's, of course, that's how you are. You're doing things with your life, and children haven't entered the picture. But when they haven't entered the picture by 40, 45, I see this odd sort of spiritual ingrownness to people where they start to, like, you know, take their comic book collections a little too seriously, or have one too many pet names for their wife, or
dog sweaters,
sure.
A lot of fun.
Fun. See, I see the fun, Adam. I see the fun. And you know what I see? It's almost like, you know, you get envious of somebody. You see somebody who, like, they keep screwing up and somehow they keep getting money and getting laid. And you go, what has that guy got? You know, who did they blow that they're never falling on their face? And that's what I see. I see people who can go out to eat.
Yeah. Oh, I tell you, it's great. I remember what my life was like even before I had a dog. And the difference in the amount of fun that I used to have compared to now is just incalculable. I would love to go back to that. Do I fantasize about leaving my dog outside and removing his tags and identification?
That's like you do with an older relative. You cut the tags out of their clothes and, like, leave them at a Whataburger or something. Mm-hmm. I've heard about this happening.
I think it's called sweeting.
That's not a bad idea. I mean, it depends. I mean, you know, they could be very amusing, you know. I don't know, Adam. I guess I feel in some ways, though. I mean, you know, I appreciate, you know, that you have a very enjoyable life, but I feel like in some ways there's a disparity, and I almost wonder, you know, is there a bag of flour we could ask you to carry? Is there something where you could just you could get some kind of a really I don't know, soul crushing responsibility that would just give you some parity?
Who's going to Adam's not going to be able to participate in a meaningful way in our book and video series about parenting if he hasn't had some sort of experience with that sort of continuous spiritual deadening that the chirp of a child who you're legally obliged to look after,
right?
Just in your right ear constantly, not letting up, not letting you sleep.
I tell you, like an ice pick. It's like an ice pick that it hasn't quite poked, but it's getting very near.
Yeah.
Adam's like a beautiful drinking glass that hasn't been shattered. And there's ways in which I respect that, but it also makes me very angry sometimes.
I think that, yeah, the dog is partway there, but yeah.
It's a start. No, Adam, right now, you and your lady, you've talked about this. Sometimes you or your lady have to go home and make sure the diggy gets a walk, right? You like at lunch or something?
Oh, well, I work from home, so I have to. And that doesn't mean I spend more time taking care of him. It just means that I spend more time ignoring him actively. So he sleeps all day, and I feel horrible neglecting him all day. But, you know, I just think of it as if I were at an office, he would also be ignored. So I'm just ignoring him with more efficiency, I guess.
That's good. Merlin, how do you shut out the needs of your child?
Well, it's a complicated question. It's probably really, really a three-part question, and I really only know one part, which is I drink very, very heavily, and earplugs are good, you know, for both of us.
Yeah.
But you know what it is? It's hard because there's still some small part of you that says I should be helping with this.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't want to stop her. I want her to explore, you know. And, you know, if she's going to get into some kind of, you know, Eric Clapton situation, I want to be there. I don't want it to go horribly wrong. But I want her to know, you know, window's open. I can't change that. You know, it's hard, Scott. It's hard because they really do break you at a certain point. And there's no going back. I don't know if there's any analog. You know, the thing is, of course, they get the hook in during these first few years. This is why we don't throw them in a river. It's because they are cute and they're fun and they say your name, right? It's kind of like having one of those robots from the 70s that plays 8 tracks, you know. Except it gets in my daughter's case, might get diarrhea for a couple of days, which is fine. But you know, and then you take care of that and you make it through, and now you've got like the sense of achievement. Now you got some skin in the game.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think Adam, to be honest, I apologize. I take it back. I think you're further along than we thought. I think you're already showing a nice level of emotional distance.
It took me a long time to become attached to my children. Like when they were born, I didn't really feel very much for any of the four of them, and now there's just two, so I guess I feel a little bit better.
That's probably a lot of that's bad timing, because I'm guessing you were probably at least one time you were like in the middle of a cigarette when it happened, and you thought, I'm not gonna waste this.
Right? It is true that when the first child was born, we had accidentally, when I say we, I mean I had accidentally been drinking fairly heavily that night, mm-hmm. and it was about a week early, and I thought, well, I got one more in me. And so we had a few drinks, said goodbye to everyone at the party, and then 3 hours later we're walking around the basement floor of the hospital. And they don't let you into the room until the mother is sufficiently dilated and ready to roll, right? Mm-hmm. So she was in full labor and in her hospital gown and basically checked in, but they don't want to spare the room until, you know, you're pretty much on your way there.
They'll send you home is what they'll do.
They'll send you home, sure. In this case, at Swedish Hospital in Seattle, they actually just made us walk around the hospital. So it was
I have a quick question. Yeah. Sorry to interrupt. But you know when they say however many centimeters dilated? And I know this just from watching TV and movies.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
So is there a guy, like a little guy with a like a compass or a protractor or something that's actually measuring that, or you just eyeball it?
Yeah, it's called the medical vulvan, and mm-hmm. it's his job to get in there, and he's got like one of those Stanley kind of tape measures, and that's what they do. They get in there. No, it's usually, there's like a nurse, she's usually kind of heavy and has white shoes, and she's very taciturn. And I don't know about you, Scott, but we were browbeaten. I mean, they made it very clear to us that, like, we should not bug them mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. until it was seriously time. And at least for us, I mean, this is a time when doing anything, you have a very, very large lady who's in a lot of discomfort and pees pretty much nonstop. Mm. And I have bowel movements a lot anyway, so it's a long trip. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to get back in the car at that point, you know, for either of us. You don't know where that's going to go. You're spinning a pretty big wheel.
No, it's
and,
true.
But, you know, I mean, but it's funny. The whole thing, you realize how incredibly medieval the entire process is. I mean, I don't know what it was. Is that really the name Swedish Hospital? Is that what it's called?
It's called Swedish Hospital in Seattle. It's a very nice hospital. My wife chose it to deliver the child because they had hot tubs in the rooms.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Which was to make my long story short, my downfall, because, as I mentioned, I had had some drinks, and she went into labor at, 11:30? What's that? What's 11:30? What's 11:30? 11:30 is bedtime, right? Yeah. So I was sleepy. We had been walking around miles and miles of this hospital's basement. We passed a snack bar at least four or five times. I had like three chocolate milkshakes because I heard they were great. She didn't want to share them because I guess she wasn't hungry, because I guess when you're in labor, you're not so hungry. And so I had, you know, I was coming off the sugar rush, a long walk, being fairly drunk. And then, you know, she was still hours from giving birth, so I took a soak.
You took a jacuzzi?
That's a lot to spring on you, Scott. You should be limber and comfortable.
Well, her mom was there, too. It wasn't just me.
So. Oh, in the tub with you?
Her mom, yeah. it was all three of us. No, it was me in the tub. And then I got out. I guess I took too long, because when I opened the door back into the main hotel room, the look that both mother and daughter shot at me was a little rough. But in my defense, I had had those four or five sort of, let's say, sedative type of activities in my recent past, and I slept for a while. And I'm ashamed of that, and I'll own that.
Oh, because you're supposed to share the load at that point, just in terms of you're supposed to bear some of the fake, you know, pain.
That's right. That's right. You have a sort of sympathetic obligation.
You're not going to go have fun if I can't go have fun.
That's right. I mean, what would it be like if the men's, if the, you know, the old-fashioned father's waiting room had, like, pinball machines and, like, a bar? They made, even in that old-fashioned sort of misogynistic way, they made the men endure the pain of waiting and not knowing what's happening in its own special way. Like, the man sort of went through that ritual of pain and tribulation on his own, even though it looked like it wasn't mm-hmm. as bad. Of course, it wasn't physically as bad, but he still had to endure that. So I guess I guess in my relatively relaxed approach to the sympathetic sharing of pain, there may or may not be some lingering resentment there.
We chose, my wife did most of the heavy lifting on really every conceivable part of this. My part in this really came down to just kind of stealing myself for one evening in February of 2007, and that was pretty much all I've done since then. And it was a good night. We had a good night, and just I got it past the goalie on the first shot. I'm a lucky man. That's pretty much all I had to do. And so, you know,
you're saying this isn't birth night. This is making love night.
Well, I guess so, yeah.
Okay.
You know, but she did a lot of the heavy lifting. She did the research. She looked into all the different stuff. She planned. She got the classes stuff. You know, I brought her water and stuff. But, you know, but we chose exactly. We chose the place we went for the same reason, because we heard there was a tub. And so we had been to one of these classes. Did you ever go to like one of the totally natural classes, the full on natural?
Yeah, but just as an aside, how retarded is it that the nexus of all of our decisions is they have a tub?
It's relaxing. You're right. I mean, I guess it's a little bit, you know, like I don't know, like is it near the golf course or something? But it is very relaxing. It's very. But see, our tub was broken, and my lady was ballistic. And
oh,
I was ballistic on her behalf.
That's not good. That is not good.
No, and it was kind of dirty. There was like sand and little small pebbles in there too.
That's babies.
You think that's babies?
That's not sand. That's babies. That's because when you have a baby, obviously there's like 450,000 tiny babies that didn't take, right? So that shit comes out too.
Yeah. It's like seahorses. Huh. The thing is though, we went to innumerable classes. We tried different things. I mean, it's a lot like when you're in college and you're trying to figure out what you should believe in. And one of the classes we went to was a 2-part series on like full on, like, you know, 6-9s level of natural. And it was just about the squirreliest and most annoying experience I ever had in my life. So, you know, we took with us, I probably shouldn't get into it, but we brought with us to the hospital the desire to have the tub, because the tub is critical for these screwy natural birth people.
Right.
The woman who taught our classes, let me just give you a really quick look.
Sorry. Can I just interrupt?
Yeah, yeah.
You're talking about a birthing tub?
Yeah.
Where you'd actually, the baby would come out into the tub. This is something that you were interested in.
It's something where my lady said, you know, I don't want to do the thing where they, you know, where they just knock you out, you know. And
right.
So we looked into it.
Because the theory is that the baby is born into an environment that's much like the where she came from. Is that the theory?
I think that's what some people say. I think you can get a little bit Tom Cruise about it and like go a little bit crazy about that stuff. But there's something to be said for this, which is that you're not, if you're in a hospital, let's be honest, they're going to treat you like a patient.
Right, right.
And, you know, and the part of the Kool-Aid that I guzzled easily was the part of like, hey, this happens around the world every day. This shouldn't have to be,
right,
you know,
right,
a medical procedure. And so with gusto, I went to this class where you sit on the floor with a lot of people with sandals and beards. But the woman who taught the class was just so punchable.
Women who teach classes are responsible for turning off millions of people every day from interesting spiritual movements. Don't you think?
You think that's a pattern?
I would say from Tai Chi to mm-hmm. alternative pregnancy and childbirth techniques to first aid to any, like literally almost anything, is that Birkenstock wearing woman with Coke bottle glasses and a brown bob just holding the model whatever up in the air,
cross legs,
crossing her.
Dudes can play it cool though. Dudes who teach these classes.
I did not meet a single dude, and you're right, yeah. Scott. Every single one of them was annoying. This one. Okay, so let me give you a quote from her. Well, I did in the tub right there, and I had a Michelob waiting for me in the mini fridge. That's literally what she said.
This is the lady that we had was a little more serious. She talked like this, and she wanted us to make sure that we knew our meditation techniques.
Do you have a doula? Do you have a doula, Scott? You have a doula. Did you have a doula? It's like a doula is like a lawyer for the mom. Did you have one of those? It's like a lawyer. I thought you didn't.
I'm sorry. This is going to be a little awkward, but I thought you knew that. I thought you knew that Adam was our doula.
Well, I had made it pretty clear to you that this was something that was important to me to help you with, and you. I think you had said specifically, we're not interested in a doula. That's not how we roll. So I'm
awkward. Cake.
Well, it was just that I think Tayshia was just more comfortable.
It's not
with
a big
Adam's.
Deal. It's not a big deal at all. It's fine.
I'm sorry.
I have made it very clear to you that I have enjoyed the small glances of your wife's vagina that I've had, but I haven't really had the kind of in-depth chance to memorize it in a medical context.
Yeah.
And
well, and that's not your fault. I mean, Adam has had that time to get to know her vagina, and you just didn't have that because, you know, proximity breeds contempt.
Do you think you might want to have another one or maybe have Daddy come in?
Yeah, I guess we could talk about it, I guess.
I could bring in a mini fridge with a Michelob.
I'm happy to hand it off to you, Merlin. I don't need to go through
you
that.
You got again. Enough? You got enough of that?
Yeah,
you got
sure.
It. Okay.
I don't know.
Onwards other and upwards, my friend.
Of all these, and I'm sorry. I don't want to castigate half of the, you know, planet as being bad teachers. A lot of these women are doing it because it's women who care and go into these positions. He said, excusing himself before adding a comma. But this woman in the class, she taught the how to be safe with a baby class. And it was like arrested development thing. And that's why you don't like it.
And that's why.
The whole thing. She's like, helium balloons, latex balloons. Let me tell you about latex balloons. One little square of a latex balloon is the perfect device to cover the trachea of a child. I personally knew a child who, next time your child is invited to a birthday party, ask them very honestly, promise me, swear to me, will there be latex balloons at the party? She also had a friend. Basically, this woman has had a friend die pretty much every exotic way that she can. She had another friend. She goes, let me tell you something. If there's anything wrong, you dial 911. You done that before you do anything. You done 911. I had a very dear friend who died because somebody thought they could drive him to the hospital.
Wait a second. Was Arlie Ermey your Lamaze teacher?
oh, Jesus Christ! If I could do it all over again, wipe that smile, wipe that smile off your face, new father. You're going to be smiley face, new father. What are you looking at, vagina haver? I'm going to call you 7 meters dilated woman.
Oh, boy. Adam, do you think you could eyeball a dilation?
Yeah.
Like how many yards?
That should be a new standard of, that should be a new test of visual acuity, is not like upside down E's, but how many
centimeters? I can usually do it by sniffing somebody's chair. Except, I don't do it. I do it in inches. That's
what is
just
because
I'm from the U.S.
What is that? 3.5 inches? Oh, boy. You better get in. Boy.
Wow, it's a matter of inches? I thought it was centimeters.
Yeah, it's centimeters. Mm. It's centimeters. And it's, I guess it's how far the thing pushes down, but, you know.
I'll tell you, though.
Wait. Did I completely misunderstand what dilated means?
No, you're right.
It's the gaping hole, isn't it? Yeah.
It's the gaping hole. Yeah.
Okay.
And so, you know, the thing about a gaping hole is that
that's my favorite Shel Silverstein book, by the way.
and you'll remember this from your SATs. A one centimeter dilation, 1 centimeter diameter circle is very small. 2 centimeter diameter circle is very small as well. But each centimeter that you're adding on is not adding linear space.
No, it's adding it's logarithmic.
Exactly. It's adding a tremendous amount of surface area each centimeter. So when you go to 4 centimeters, you're talking about a massive hole, right? Mm. Shit doesn't even get real until you get to 8 centimeters.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Right? Babies don't come out until you're at like 12 centimeters.
Ugh.
Yeah. No, it's horrible. I thought it was done.
If you can make it to 18 centimeters, you get multi-ball and an extra game.
Oh,
no,
my goodness.
It's true. That's logarithmic. It's actually, that's from the Latin for giant ass pussy. That's straight out of Aristophanes. It was a weird thing because I have to be honest with you. I've seen my wife's vagina in the past, and boy, but it's you see it a lot, and the lighting is very, very bright. It's and there's really, the thing is, okay, here's the thing, right? This is the same thing. We've talked about this with the food. We've talked about this with airlines. We've talked about this with everything. If you do something every day as your job, there's really only so much special that you can bring to it for anybody. Don't you think?
Mm.
I mean, funeral directors. You've talked about funeral directors, Scott, the world's fastest funeral director. I think even if you're pulling a baby out of somebody's JJ, there's only so far you're going to be able to go before you're thinking, you know, my taco is in the next room and I'm kind of, you know, chop chop, you know.
Absolutely.
And they want that room. They want that fucking room. That's the thing. You're dead right. It is a machine. It's like a printing press. You know, things got to be running all the time. And they only want you in there if you're pushing.
Of course, that's what keeps them professional and level-headed, sure. too, yeah, is the boredom.
I wouldn't want the staff getting all sentimental like me and crying in the middle of it. I wouldn't. That doesn't seem
Holy
safe.
Shit! Holy shit, what's that? Doctor. Holy, oh my God. Yeah, exactly. Oh my God, you're going to have the most immaculately filmed birth son or daughter, Adam.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to do that. I'm not going to.
Would you try and do it all with one lens? Would you Anderson it? Like, what would you do? Would you do multiple cameras? How would
maybe
you want to do
three cameras tracking from, shots so, like POV, just like mostly reaction mm-hmm. shots, reverse angles. You know, it depends on how many crew I guess we could fit in the room.
Adam, if it's useful at all, the rooms are really, really they're quite large.
Yeah, they're big. They're big because you know for emergencies they need to wheel in some serious equipment.
Okay,
so.
Can you fit like a green screen?
And they got a lot of they got a lot of plugs. There's a lot of plugs. You can easily. Are you talking about you bringing some Roscoe Green? Is that what you're saying?
No, I think you could fit a. I think Adam, you could fit a green screen. So you're saying like
no question.
You're saying like you put a green screen behind. Mom and it's like she's on a roller coaster and giving.
That's birth. Right. That's right. Or I mean, what is the miracle of birth could turn into the miracle of birth in outer space.
Oh my God!
For instance,
or just some things we talked about in the past. It could be like you know. Also, Charlton Heston is like parting the Red Sea. If you know what I mean. If you know what I mean.
or just like 19th century Paris. She's just on the street in 19th century Paris,
romantic.
And people are walking around in carriages and.
Sure.
What about Beretta?
What about if you're showing? You know, no, never mind. I was thinking maybe
you're thinking of showing just, up. You're gonna show a porno behind her. Is that
no,
what you're
but like something like the miracle of birth, like an old educational film.
Or oh
you
god,
know,
no, that's
on
it.
Itself.
That's it.
Very postmodern.
No, that's exactly what you do. You show behind her a giant vagina, so it looks like she's actually. Because here's the thing:
mm-hmm. It's like the stand next to a fat girl thing. Ooh, that's good.
Smart.
That's good. You look slender, and then probably you know her pores would look large. If Adam, would you be using like a projector for that? Do you think?
Because mm-hmm. That's it. That's it. Mm-hmm. We got it. This is the answer to natural childbirth. This is what's been eluding people all along.
This is artificial childbirth.
Well, it's artificial, but without drugs. So you just have her. Every time she freaks out or she's in pain or blah, whine, complain, mm-hmm. complain. Yeah. You look over and you say, what the fuck? Look at that 4-foot vagina.
Uh-huh.
Okay, now look down. There's nothing.
Right. Oh, like it's great. Yeah, whiner. you make it theatrical.
You're giving her the gift of context.
You could have like a, you know, like a football team, like the home team running out of the vagina. Uh-huh. We could have like... You could have like confetti and like the flaming lips, just like you know, playing a concert inside her vagina, mm-hmm. which would actually be really, probably sonically speaking, a very, very nice space.
I'd go to that.
Did you guys have birth music playing?
I'm gonna go out on a limb and guess that the Mann family had like a mixtape.
We had an iPod dedicated for this because this is something that you do. But
okay, Natalie Merchant.
what's the matter here? What about you, Scott? No, I got more on this, but I'm curious. Did you guys
nope.
bring a boom?
No, we didn't have
anything. Tasha's so sensible. I could just see her going, get that shit out of here.
she's not particularly sentimental or attached to that kind of thing, no.
Mm. Right. Like get this thing out of me and you know, go get me some pledge. I want to clean this place up. I could see her being real practical.
I think she was very practical and very, you know, despite the fact that of course she was in a lot of pain. But back to your back to the mixtape. What was who put it together? Did you put it together, or did your beautiful wife put it together?
Well, it's funny because this actually does lead to a somewhat interesting backstory. Yeah, we had some songs on there. We had some like I think we had some Sloan, and okay. And we had some like kind of you know I think we had One by Brian Eno, one of my favorite ambient pieces that I enjoyed listening to. Calm me down.
This was to ensure that your baby would be born white.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we put a little bit of Johnny Mathis on there, and but here's the funny thing, and this is the point where we're very fortunate that women do not listen to our program, because here's the problem, people. And when I say people, I mean ladies.
Sure.
They think they can plan a pregnancy like they could plan a lunch, mm-hmm. or maybe like plan a wedding. The first one. Okay, the second one, of course, they understand it's Ragnarok. It's not going to happen.
They think that tracks 1 through 11 are going to be when I'm getting ready for it.
No, it's like when you're now Adam, Adam, when you were practicing to have intercourse, didn't you have a soundtrack and you knew like when this particular, you know, Boys to Men song came on, that's the point, like when you'd be like exploring her labia, you knew. You had like a program probably ready, right?
No, I'm not that kind of guy.
Not at all.
No. I'm miserable when it comes to musical accompaniment to lovemaking.
Boy, I don't.
It's always going to be like somehow accidentally an instructional Japanese language track that's in there.
The woman answers no. Listen and repeat.
Ie.
Ah, you understand Japanese, don't you?
Ie.
Just listen.
あなたは日本語がわかりますね。
How does she tell you she would like to drink something?
何か飲みたいです。
欲しくありません。
When counting long and slender objects like bottles, pens, cigarettes, etc., you add hon after the number.
そして、これはあなたの体はきれいです。
I don't know what I would do with that. I would totally fall out of rhythm unless I had Sarah McLachlan's Your Love is Better Than Ice Cream.
God, you're right, you know? No, here's the thing. And again, I say first experience with this because it's like anything where you don't really know what's going to happen. You have this idea in your head of what's going to happen, and you certainly, because you have no idea how powerless on some level you will be because of nature, you like I say, it's like you're going to plan a garden party and go, well, the canopy is looking out at 316. And you go in there, and it's like they might go, hey, guess what? C-section. Put your fucking boombox away or whatever.
Shit, guys, that's an awesome, like, if we ever make t-shirts for doctors on, like, on ropes, doing ropes courses or whatever, put your fucking boombox away is awesome.
But it's true, though. You go in there and you've got all of this stuff. You know what I mean? It's like when you pack to go somewhere you've never been to. It's like me. You guys know me. You've only ever seen me wear, like, two things. And yet, I pack like you know, I don't know, like I'm going to be in some kind of traveling company of the Wiz. And I got all these pants that I've never worn and these collared shirts that still have all the pins in them. And I wear this one flannel shirt that I'm wearing right now with holes in it and a pair of Levi's 501s. And that's really all I wear. Well, the same thing happens here. You show up. Now, you're reminded, at this point, your vagina is stretched because a child is trying to come out. And you're running around trying to fucking get incense burning and, the chameleon. Camellias aren't really where I wanted them to be, and like, oh, this is the wrong In Excess song, and the doctors are going, we got a thing to do here.
Yeah,
and it's gonna, you're gonna, you know, and the problem is, of course, now your song is gonna go by.
Right,
you're gonna get your special song on, and I Will Always Love You. Let's say the Dolly Parton version. beautiful song, but it goes by, and you've heard that song now, and you're still pushing. Right? Yeah, you say, okay, rewind. You bring it back, and you're going, and seven more times. You're like, you know what? Turn off the fucking Dolly Parton and get this piece of shit out of me. I want this out of me. I don't care if it takes salad tongs or a fucking Dyson. I want to get out of here. I don't want to be looking at these people in masks who are looking at their watches. I want to move on. I want to raise this child and be able to get it out of my home as quickly as possible.
The story you hear, having had a very, relatively speaking, easy labor and childbirth time-wise, it was, I think, just a couple of hours total from the time that she was in the bed to the time the child was born. Having had an easy childbirth and still, and having slept through half of it and still counting the minutes and seconds as if they were hours. I cannot imagine people who had, you know, 36 hour labors. That is a sort of frozen time that I just can't, like, I just couldn't, I wouldn't be able to get through, I feel like.
My lady was a bit of a champion. You've met my lady. She's slender.
Sure.
And our daughter was just under 10 pounds when she was born, which was about 8% of my wife's pre-pregnancy weight. So I want you to think about 8% of your body weight coming out of your wang.
Every morning.
Right, Right. That's those prostate suppositories you've been using.
Suppositories.
God, it's always urethras with us. What is it with that? But no, it is remarkable, and it's a miracle, and it's beautiful, and it's, you know, it's a mess.
Oof. Boy, you know what's beautiful is placentas.
Mm. Yeah. That's one of those things, like, you know, like cunnilingus, where you can't really prepare yourself. Like, once you've seen it, you're okay with it, but you're not really ready. It's like a Portuguese man of war, like made out of raspberries or something. Yeah. You see it, and it's just that's not what, you know, and you guys kept yours to make mulligan stew. What is it you're doing with it?
We buried it under a tree stump for
at your old house.
Yeah. So, no, we took it with us. We dug it up and took it with us.
Oh, come on.
No.
Now, did the new owner know that? Was that in the deed?
Oh, sure. I assume. I mean, there's the placenta clause. It's a 1978 Nakayama versus the state of North Carolina.
Right. I thought that was an early King Crimson record.
Placentas, except in cases of eminent domain.
Malfeasance and, yeah. That's so, and now Scott Simpson, when you got the tree out, were you really more interested in the tree, or were you looking for the bits of the man of war?
Are we speaking metaphorically? I'm lost. No. I don't know what we did with our placenta. I think we might have.
Did you mislay it?
I want to say we donated it.
Okay. Oh, to somebody who could really use it, like as a. Like a homeless people, yeah,
doorstop or a bundt cake. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah. Be a nice kind of handbag, at least for a couple hours. Mm. I wouldn't put anything really nice in there.
Another placenta, maybe.
Yeah, more placental stuff, like placenta fragments.
Oh, you know, like that's not a bad idea. You could pair that. That's really not a bad idea at all. You know, God, people love babies.
This has been You Look Nice Today, featuring Lonely Sandwich, Scott Simpson, and Hot Dogs Ladies. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, just like that girl.
Ugh.
Yeah. Yeah.